Reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to episode 22 of In the Gravel Trap. I'm your host, Adam Tate of Tribute Racing, joined by my usual co-hosts, Christopher DeHardy of Motorsport.com, Josh Farmer of Motorsport Monday, and eventually, Joey Barnes, also of Tribute Racing. And like many shows before, we have on our wonderful special and frequent guest, Frank Santoroski of Drafting the Circuits. We've got a lot of racing news to talk to you guys about from last weekend and more to look forward to for this weekend. Chief topic will be to kick us off, IndyCar at NOLA Motorsports Park. It was some good swamp buggy racing we saw when they were actually racing. I'll toss it over to Mr. DeHardy first. Chris, you were there. Give us a feel for how damp it was in real life. It looked pretty soggy on the television.
Oh, it was plenty damp. I wish it would have had a lot better weather out there, but there were things, of course, that we cannot control, weather, of course, being one of them. I will say this, though, it was very good, of course, to be there. And all of the other media and stuff that I did that weekend, besides just fighting for the Advocate, it was a lot of fun doing it, too.
Good. I'm glad it was fun. I'm sure you had more fun there than we did watching on television.
you could probably say that. Then again, at least y'all were drier than I was, so that's always a plus for you guys.
Very true. Well, what was your takeaway from the crowd, from the drivers, from the teams, from everyone you talked to? I know the weather was a damper on it, but you know there's a lot of yellow running, there's a lot of caution, there's a little bit of controversy, a surprise winner. Was it a successful first event? There's a lot of mixed opinions. What's yours?
Honestly, I just wish it was – the only thing I would change, of course, is that it would just be drier, honestly. That was it, really. I can't change much else about it, really. That being said, the only other big issue of the weekend was, honestly, they didn't have – they didn't have photo holes in the fence. That was the other big thing, is that a lot of photographers were having a fit because there were no photo holes that were allowed to be cut in the fence, and it really just wasn't a good look for the track or for everybody else. Now, the track did relent and allow photographers to be taken to other parts of the course with some cart or something like that, but still, it just wasn't really – they didn't really treat them well. And then it also wasn't very good that the media center just didn't have the kind of amenities that a lot of people are used to. But then again, this is a first-year event. They do have time to learn for next year as well.
Very true. Frank, you have some thoughts on the race?
I don't even know where to start with the race, mate. I was so disappointed because I was hoping for so much out of this race, and I just felt bad for the organizers and the fans and the series that the weather did not contribute to helping out. We saw a couple of similar races in Road America in 2001 and again in 2002, where we just couldn't get a lot of green flag laps in there. My biggest issue was, you know, the timed race rule. Does that still need to be here? The time race rule came along during the kart era when we had a golf match to get to, where there wasn't other different options to move the coverage to. There wasn't streaming television. There wasn't alternative networks. You had to get the race in and get it done. Hour and 45-minute timed race, yeah, maybe. But in my mind, the goal of this race was to broaden the fan base, bring the series to a new, you know, group of fans who have not been exposed to IndyCar racing, and then we go ahead and let them sit in the rain, have the whole thing under yellow, have the last 30 laps, 26 are under yellow, and have a yellow flag winner, instead of trying to get that thing going again because of the time rule. So in my mind, I'm left a little baffled that we couldn't have kept going for a few more laps, or at least to try to get a finish under green. You know, great job to Hinch, great job to the Schmidt Motors, Schmidt-Peterson team for making that call to stay out. Good for them, but I'd like to see a few more green laps than the ones we had.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and just jump in on here. It's I don't even know what to describe, what to really describe this race other than a show. Pardon, don't want to say the S word on the air, but it's just, I mean even from qualifying, when they gave that bogus penalty on Sebastian Bourdais for, you know, for coming back on the track and impeding the you know, this is a saying that he impeded Tony Kanaan. You know, when, I mean, Bourdais and Jimmy Vassar pretty much summed it up by saying, you know, it's raining. You couldn't see the other car. And from what it looked like, you know, Tony didn't have to jump on the throttle and say, or jump on the brake. My apologies, getting a little ahead of myself. Didn't have to jump on the brake, and Bourdais waved him by. And at the end of the day, Kanaan still made it P2, and Bourdais was P1. I mean, it goes back to the. I know it's not like a broken record talking about Brian Barnhart, but you know, it goes back to the bogus call he made on Elio when Elio was not blocking at Edmonton. You know, it's just can give me some kind of evidence that shows that Bourdais was blocking. But anyways, on the race, I mean, it was just, you know, things, the fans deserve better, and it's just we're supposed to be professional drivers here, and it looked so amateurish, and all of the ladder series, you know, that ran the Pro Mazda and the Insta prototype lights, which were there, they all ran in the rain just fine. I mean, I know with an Indy car, you've got more power, more weight, more tire, everything. But, you know, it's like, you know, yeah, I mean, like Frank said, it was much like Road America, and then throw in, you know, the tracks below sea level, or just right above sea level, one of the two.
4 feet above.
Four feet above. Thank you very much. So, and you know, it was just the worst of all possible things that could come together. I mean, I do think that if they moved Nola to, you know, if they were to move Nola to February, it could potentially be a good race. I mean, it's a downfall because, you know, Andretti Sports Marketing did a lot of time and effort and energy in promoting the race. You know, and from what racing we saw, I mean, the first 15 laps, I mean, Montoya was pretty much untouchable, and he would have probably gone on to win the race had we not had the chain of yellows. But you know, I got to give a shout out to Simona De Silvestro. I mean, she passed four cars in one corner, and then, you know, she almost had second on Hinch and Elio, but she ran out of room there. I mean, she pulled off one of her signature, some bigger balls than Paul Tracy moves. So she's kind of fighting for her job now too. But and then for the brief period of time, you know, James Jakes was rather racy against Elio. But then again, they were only racy for a short period of time. But I do have a little bit of an issue too, on that final accident, of the safety issue where when Pagenaud was forced off the track by Ryan Hunter-Reay, and then he slid off the track in the damp. I mean, the wreck was kind of similar to the wreck between the two Porsches at the Rolex 24 Daytona. But, you know, then Pagenaud came across the track, hit Hunter Rea, and then Hunter Rea smashed into Bourdais and nearly decapitated Bourdais. And, you know, and there's a safety concern with that of the cars. The DW12 is supposed to have this anti-interlocking technology, but I'm seeing that the curved side pods pretty much turned into a launching ramp for Hunter Rea's car. So that's another safety issue that needs to be addressed. I don't know. It's just if you know, you're gonna have these things in racing, but it's just you shouldn't get hurt if you don't have to. So
speaking of safety issues, Josh, need we say more about Francesco Dracone and his accident in pit lane?
Oh yes, we don't need to say any more about that. And Francesco Dracone, which actually will bring me to my next point, of Dracone spun coming onto pit road and hit his crew member and crew chief and front tire carrier Todd Phillips, and Phillips was sent into the air. The video has been posted on his Facebook page for the world to see, and he was lucky to escape with just a cut on his leg and a cut on his nose, thank God. But the issue has actually produced a little bit of a spat on Twitter, starring the driver of that, Francesco Dracone. Let me pull up his Twitter right now. Because he came into the pits and he was going along fine, and then all of a sudden he turned left in the car, and the car slid, and you know, and he claims that his pit stall was the only stall that had the sandbags, which didn't allow the water to dry. So okay, fair enough, but then we have some fans on Twitter actually called Dracone out. Hang on, I'm trying.
And his responses were less than ideal for someone who should be driving. He should be a professional race car driver. Then again, some people may say, "Oh, people haven't given him a chance." But then again, his times weren't necessarily the greatest as well. Course.
Exactly.
Now, of course, we must also say, first and foremost, that Todd Phillips was released from the hospital. He had 6 stitches on his lower right leg, and he is doing just fine. Thank you very much. And we can also say today as well, an update from Michael Johnson, the paralyzed Pro Mazda driver that had an issue with St. Petersburg. He was released from the hospital today in good spirits as well. So at least we have some good news to kind of counterbalance what happened at NOLA as well. That being said, I did just to go back about Bourdais and that incident while you're searching up Dracone's Twitter account and what's going on with there. I spoke with all 3 drivers afterwards, and Bourdais was obviously the most colorful. He basically said they need to up our game because we look like monkeys out there. So yeah, he was pretty miffed about the whole situation. But keep going, Josh.
Yeah, well, actually, I've looked up his Twitter account. And he has actually deleted the tweets, but there's also a tweet that he posted at St. Petersburg that was rather, you know, that was rather, I mean, someone tweeted to Dracone and said something to the effect of, you know, thank God for all these aero kit cautions, or else Francesco is keeping Dracone in the race. I mean, keep in mind, this is while Dracone is running 4 seconds a lap off the pace. Make of that what you may, but then Dracone tweeted something back to the effect of saying, "Hey, I saw your mom out on the circuit," and then it looks like the other tweets that were in question were also, and it looks like he has actually deleted those, but they were things to that effect, but at this point you're supposed to be a professional race car driver. I mean, now, you know, we can bash Dracone all we want for being, you know, he's five seconds a lap off the pace in an open wheel car when you're that slow, you know, sure, it might not be Sugigaki Hattori dangerous where you're going 140 miles an hour down the pit road at Long Beach. I mean, that's plain dangerous. But when you're, you know, you're 5 seconds a lap off pace, you know, on these tight street circuits, you know, something's bound to happen. And Dracone had kind of, you know, made a self-fulfilling prophecy on the restart where he was third in line and he couldn't get up to speed, and Helio and Elio slammed into the back of him and spun him out, you know. But I mean, all that aside, you know, for Dracone to go out there and to go out there and pretty much say directly back to that, directly back to the fans that they're idiots for calling him out, I mean, that's just totally unprofessional. And, you know, if Elio Castroneves he got fined for his sister tweeting something about IndyCar officiating on his Twitter account. You know, if they're going to fine him for that, and if they're going to fine John Barnes for complaining about the Honda wastegate being too big in 2012, you know, they need to step in and do something about Dracone to talking crap to people. I mean, like I said, we can sit here and criticize how he even has an IndyCar license because he's clearly the worst driver out there.
Speaking of stepping in and doing something, part of the biggest problem that led to all the cautions, that led to the crashes, that can lead to Dracone keeping up, and, you know, we can debate the merits of Twitter all night long and whether a series should or shouldn't get involved in it. But part of the reason that kept happening was poor drainage on the circuit that would never let them have a complete dry line. There'd be a dry line that would form, and then there'd be places where there were puddles, particularly leading onto the main straightaway, which led to so many of these issues to begin with. And Frank has brought up an excellent point, so I will toss it over to Frank. What was your thought, Frank?
Oh, you know, Dracone aside and Twitter aside, I've watched racing for years. I watched Racing in the Rain for years, and it turns my mind to Formula One, where they always said that we had the rain tires, the slicks, but they also had the intermediate tires. The intermediate tires were just crap; they just didn't work on one or the other. But IndyCar doesn't have, you know, Firestone doesn't have a good intermediate tire right now, and I really, as I was watching this race, when we saw the guys. We saw the first 16 laps go down swimmingly, very fine with the rain tires. When we started to switch the slicks, we saw Tony Kanaan in the mud. We saw Chavez get high-headed on the course there, stall the car. But I just really wonder if a good intermediate tire wouldn't help with some of these races where we can just go ahead and get some racing in. Firestone doesn't have an intermediate tire. Again, it hasn't worked in Formula One. Maybe this is something that can work in IndyCar to at least get a race in, rather than a yellow parade. And that's just my thoughts on that, because I think that the slicks were just there was too much water on the track, and the rain tires, there was too much dry line on the track, so. Maybe we need an intermediate tire for the series. That's just my thought.
I totally agree. I mean, there's a couple things. I mean, it's like, you know, I was actually talking to another writer from my publication. He was saying, you know, that we've had this DW12 car since 2002, and yet they haven't produced an adequate rain tire for it. I mean, that just doesn't. It doesn't make any sense. Which I don't know if IndyCar won't let Firestone make an intermediate tire because they say, oh, it's going to cost you too much money, or if Firestone just doesn't want to make it. But, you know, either way, you know, something's got to be done.
But we could have used one at Houston last year or at Toronto.
Yes.
Chris, you want to add a point to that?
One thing we should probably mention they're actually developing a wet tire, a new wet tire. Firestone is
true.
I just wish it was just a bunch of different factors that really should all come together. And of course, they didn't have to throw so many full course yellows. But I mean, there's no use chewing yesterday's breakfast. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
you know,
anyway,
they're developing a new rain tire. but an intermediate tire would have pretty much solved most of those issues. And I think Sebastian Bourdais summed it up perfectly, saying, you know, we look like monkeys out here. And a casual fan, a person who's never seen IndyCar before, that's the kind of thing that turns them off. So this is the kind of thing that, that Barnhart and Miles and everyone involved in IndyCar needs to look at very seriously, because truth be told, you have some of the most talented, most accomplished drivers in the world out there driving. And if they're looking like monkeys just because the series doesn't want to spend money on an intermediate rain tire, I completely point that onto the series. Just like, I know it's only 4 feet below sea level or above sea level. Either way, it's, you know, practically in the ocean. But get rid of that dip in that back straightaway to, you know, have some better drainage. So there's always little bitty things, and I feel like it's the great culmination of little bitty things that always hold IndyCar back. It's rare they ever get that perfect weekend where everything goes right, and when they do, they put on the best race of the weekend. NASCAR, Formula One, sports car, you know, drag racing, powerboat racing, it, bar none, it can be the most exciting, but they need to take care of the details. You take care of the little things, and the big things will take care of themselves.
Absolutely, man. If you look at, you know, Barber's been lucky. Barber has some
yes.
great races. Iowa Speedway has been lucky, put on some great races. These are some of the newer venues on the circuit that are working towards building an event. And I just feel so bad for the organizer of NOLA, because they're looking to build an event, and this is what they have to come from. And if you were a fan, sat there in the rain, you know, with your butt wet in the aluminum seat, you know, being shuffled away, then understands during the lightning, you know, you can't control the weather, but then when you finally do get a race, this is what you get, you know, 75% of yellow laps, you know. Are you going to come back next year? Not me.
Nope. Yeah, it's you know, it's events like this, and I think, you know, Houston 2013 comes into that it's just, you know, it was such a crap show that, you know, it made IndyCar look like a joke. Well, actually it didn't make it look like a joke. It was a joke, and you're pissing people off, and, you know, when you have 20,000 people watching your races every week, you've got to put on a better product, which, you know, I mean, I'll hope they learn, but then again, that's really all we have for IndyCar is hope, and hope is sadly a fallacy in this case.
Well, I wouldn't go quite that dark on it there, Josh, but, you know, you're a little darker than the storm clouds we saw in Louisiana this past weekend, but before we move on to Chris's baby, the Mazda Road to Indy, Frank, you had another thought?
Did I? I don't know. Let's talk about Long Beach, man. Let's not crucify the series for the poor show we put on. Long Beach, we got Long Beach coming up, 41st running of Long Beach. Gosh, that race has, I wrote an article the other day about NOLA and, you know, wondering if that could be the next Long Beach jewel on the schedule for years and years to come. Long Beach started as a Formula 5000 race back in 1974, ran Formula 1 through the late 70s, through the 80s, and it was a kart race, and then it was the final champ car race of that series, and then now it's been in the IndyCar series for years. Great track, great facility, great event. Who do you guys think is going to win Long Beach?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and go first. Which I will be at Long Beach. I'm flying out tomorrow evening. So I'm thinking it's going to be another Juan Pablo show. As long as he gets the pole and or he's in the fast six, you know, he should be able to win. But then again, last year's race, you know, we saw Ryan Hunter-Reay dominate, and Newgarden kept the lead after coming out of the pits. But then Hunter-Reay screwed up and spun out Newgarden. That changed the complexity of the race, and gave the win to Mike Conway, of all people. And, you know, nothing against Conway, just the race went from being a parade to being an interesting battle. So, but I mean, I would reckon to see, you know, Sebastian Bourdais as the next bit.
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna go different on here, like I tend to. Josh, actually, you mentioned one name that I'm actually gonna pick this year for Long Beach. He did very well at Mid-Ohio yesterday before some pit lane issues got him. He did very well at Long Beach last year, actually, and would have got a lot better of a lead coming out of his last pit stop had it not been for some trouble with the left rear corner of the car. But my pick for Long Beach is going to be Joseph Newgarden, actually. I like seeing new winners and all, and, hey, I was able to pick Hinchcliffe last week, so I figure let's try and see if I can make it 2 for 2 this go-around, and I'm going to pick Joseph Newgarden for Long Beach this year. Not to mention having a teammate with him will massively help out his effort for winning the race this year. And especially a guy like Luca Filippi is going to help him out a whole bunch.
I'll tell you what I think about Long Beach. I think that the Ganassi team is chomping at the bit. I think they got robbed of a good qualifying effort at NOLA. Scott Dixon was the fastest guy there, but I've got to wonder if these Ganassi cars are not just chopping at the bit for revenge. And I'm gonna pick Tony Kanaan for Long Beach.
Interesting.
Ooh,
pick.
I like that. I think it would be a great pick. Since Joey is not on yet, I will go completely against the grain and say something like he would say, Jack Hawksworth. But in all seriousness, Hawksworth has been one of the fastest Hondas. If he can get the lead, I think he's someone who could stay in the lead. He'd probably also say Marco, but I'm not quite feeling it for Marco. I'll say Bourdais. I think Bourdais is very angry, and maybe not even angry, but just really disappointed in how he got taken out at the end at NOLA of no fault of his own. And he's the kind of guy that would want to come back and make a statement. Same with Simon Pagenaud. So I think we might have a French winner in Long Beach, which I don't know how long it's been since a Frenchman has won there, but I would wager quite a long time.
Bourdais won in the last decade, I know that.
Bourdais won in 2007.
Seven? Okay, gotcha. Yeah, it's final year champ car. All right, well, moving on, Long Beach is going to be awesome, and there are a lot of other series visiting Long Beach, a lot of other series visited NOLA. Chief being the Mazda Road to Indy guys, Chris, why don't you give us a breakdown on how those went and what we should expect to see for Long Beach this weekend?
Well, first of all, the one Mazda Road to Indy series that didn't go NOLA is going to be at Long Beach, and that's going to be Indy Lights. Matthew Brabham will be back with Andretti Autosport for Indy Lights, which is great to see. I've seen nothing about Scott Hargrove. Let me think. Oh, yeah. So let's go down the line. Pro Mazda, their race on Saturday was canceled, actually, because of rain. So the first race that they ran was 7:55 a.m. on Sunday morning. Way earlier, right? That race was won by Santiago Urrutia of Team Pelfrey, actually. Now, second place in that race was Weyron Tan, my championship pick. Good news for him, though, was that he won the pole position for the second race of the weekend, but that race was canceled because of unraceable track conditions. That race is going to be made up at a later date. Now, as for USS 2000, Nico Jamin, I believe, won the first race of the weekend. The second race of the weekend was won by Victor Franzoni for Afterburner Autosport. That's Joey's favorite driver in that series. And Franzoni actually had to have an engine change done before second race. It was finished up at 10 o'clock on Saturday night. So good for him for winning with the brand-new engine. Did a good job, and we'll see what happens at Barber for USF and also for Pro Mazda. Adam, I'll bring it back to you.
All right. Well, I am really excited with how many groups are going to Long Beach. But I want to talk about another Grand Prix that just happened. That was the Chinese Grand Prix. Lots of speculation going into it. Could Ferrari sustain the pace that they showed in Malaysia and the shock victory they pulled out over Mercedes? Well, the short answer is no. The Empire did indeed strike back. Hamilton had a very convincing, almost an easy victory. Rosberg dutifully came in second until the post-race press conference when he kind of blew up a little bit on Hamilton, which I think was the most interesting thing of the race. But the thing that China really showed is the running order is clearly Mercedes, gap to Ferrari, gap to Williams, gap to everybody else, and that next position is really up for grabs between Sauber, Lotus, Red Bull. Different reliability issues with those teams kind of determine which one is ahead on which circuit. But it was an okay race. What were your thoughts on it, Frank?
Oh, you know what? Again, you know, I expected Mercedes to stop the field last week and Ferrari come up with a surprise win. And we were all speculating on a different race this week. And Hamilton and the Mercedes team just came right back and said, no, here we are. But this whole marital discord between Rosberg and Hamilton, that's playing out really funny. I said this last week. I wonder if Rosberg would just thrive at another team where he was number one and not be, playing second fiddle to Hamilton. So. My thoughts on it are I think the rest of the Formula 1 race, Formula 1 season is going to be Mercedes domination again. And I said that early in the season before Ferrari jumped a surprise win. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a Mercedes stomping all year long.
Yeah, I'm afraid it's looking like that. I think Ferrari can sneak in a couple more wins. Vettel maybe a couple, Kimi maybe just one. If we're lucky, and really lucky, I think Williams might be able to pull out a win. But
I love the Williams team. Pretty ominous. Yeah.
Yeah, I love Williams. And you can't help but root for them. A team that used to be great, that was, you know, reached their lowest of low, 5 points in 2013. And you've got a new up-and-comer like Bottas, who really seems to be molding himself to be the next Raikkonen, or to be the next Hakkinen, the next Flyensen. And you have a guy like Felipe Massa, who is in a redemption. This is redeeming his career. So many people forgot the highs he reached from 2006 to 2008 for Ferrari, nearly beating Hamilton to a world championship. And, you know, here he is again. He's set a pole position. He's getting podiums. He's fourth in the championship. It's a real feel-good kind of thing. I do think Mercedes is going to keep it up. I think you're right about Rosberg. At the end of the year, last year, Rosberg still had a shot to win the championship. He didn't win near as many races as Hamilton, so rightfully he didn't. But he was still within a shot. And one of his complaints in China was that Hamilton was driving too slowly, and that was backing him up into the clutches of Vettel. Now, my thinking is this. Your teammate's driving too slowly just past the guy. And the only reason you
wouldn't pass him...
Yeah, exactly. The only reason you wouldn't is if you've already been told by your team, you are number two, you have to make way to Lewis. So that's clearly what I think is going on. I think it's a misstep by Mercedes. I think Hamilton is clearly a better driver than Rosberg and more likely to win the championship. But Rosberg is a very good driver, and you're killing his motivation, and you're clearly messing with his psyche and his racecraft by this early in the long season saying, hey, man, thanks, but we just want you to be a backup. So I just can't help but feel it's a mistake. Even though they'll probably win both championships by a decent margin, it's disappointing to see.
Absolutely, yeah. I just, I've been an F1 guy as long as I can remember. First racing season I ever watched was 1978 when Mario was fighting Ronnie Peterson for the championship. And,
good year.
Very good year, very good year. But, I see these teammate issues between Hamilton and Raikkonen, or not Raikkonen, rather, but Rosberg. And, it's like Formula One has more drama than actual racing. You know, there's so many compelling stories to write about after the Formula One race in China. But the biggest thing that made the news was Lewis Hamilton spraying champagne in the face of the girl on the podium.
Exactly.
Right? You know, so, yeah,
we
had a pretty good race series, and this is what we're reduced to. Makes me sad.
Yeah, exactly. I am encouraged by the fact that they're going to Bahrain this weekend, because last year, the battle between Hamilton and Rosberg for victory in Bahrain was, I think, one of the highlights of the entire season. And I really think, I don't want to say it's Rosberg's last chance, but I do think if he wants to make a stand and put his name in the ring for Mercedes to support him for the season, he really needs to kind of do that this coming weekend and really needs to give Hamilton what for.
Yeah, otherwise it's all for naught. If he doesn't make a challenge early in the season, Hamilton's going to run away with it.
Exactly, yeah. And nobody wants a runaway championship. I mean, nothing against Vettel, but seeing him run away with it year after year, that got old. It's like when Schumacher was running away with it year after year. So I really hope Vettel makes a stand. Moving on to NASCAR, lots of commotion there as well. Why don't you tell us about the latest in NASCAR, Frank?
Well, you want me to talk about NASCAR? Okay, I can give it a shot.
Right.
Who won this week?
I do not.
Jimmy Johnson won this week. Yeah.
I
just had a momentary brain fart. Yeah. Yeah. NASCAR. Jimmy Johnson won the race in Texas. Yeah. Joey was there. Joey's not on with us, so heck with him. But,
yeah.
Joey is. I watched the first bit of the NASCAR race, and I think that the top teams right there in NASCAR are, the Johnson team, the Penske team. Those guys are running really well. So I don't know why you threw me the curveball in NASCAR when I hadn't researched. So.
I didn't know you didn't watch it. I just know you. You really support Joey Logano, and you like seeing those Penske guys
win. I love Joey Logano. You know, I'm gonna tell you an interesting fact. When I was on my own radio show, I picked Martin Truex Jr. to win for Bristol next week. But Texas race was good, and the Texas race put all the top teams in the top five.
Yeah, that's true. Well, probably my highlight of the race is that there was a rabbit that was running loose on the back straightaway, which led to some interesting in-car radio transmission. But, yes, Jimmy Johnson won in Texas. He held off a hard-charging Kevin Harvick at the end, who had more than a few words to say about blocking from various drivers in the field. It was a great race. Unfortunately, Joey is not on to regale us with stories from the media center. He had a wonderful time, I am able to report, and even won a PS3 in a driving competition. They had NASCAR 2015 set up in the media center. Team members tried it out, media members tried it out, and he had the top time. So that's our Honey Badger trying to prove his point as always. So also this weekend was the World Endurance Championship kicking off, which I think was actually the most exciting race of the weekend. It was a ridiculously close battle between Porsche and Audi, particularly at one point in the race. And Audi only pulled out the victory by a scant 4 seconds. What were your thoughts on that, Chris?
Well, I actually had the race on my computer in the media center at NOAA on Sunday morning. I'll tell you, watching the last hour, it only confirms what I told John Heindahl in person, that he is so good at his job, he can make paint drying sound pornographic. I love listening to him commentate on these races. Absolutely fantastic. Josh. Anyway, he he was really raising a fuss because the Audi that was leading the race was called into the pits with only about a few minutes left to go in the race. And Lena Gade, who was the chief engineer on the car, did a very, very, very interesting thing. She brought the leading Audi in for a final splash of fuel. And they made a chip change on the car. I'm guessing it was to help increase the power of the car. The car made a lap. The next lap, it made it stop and go that it was required to make by the rules. The leading Audi was called in because of four wheels outside the track limits while overtaking a slow car and getting an advantage on a competitor. I believe that was the what it had gained. And so then they brought the Audi in, stopped, went back out, and I believe the chip change helped the Audi enough where the Porsche couldn't catch it in the last 15 minutes of the race, and then boom, the Audi just ended up winning. It was fun to see the race there, although I didn't see much of it, but it was fun to see.
It was a great race. The thing that I'm surprised at is if you look at the preseason testing, all the teams were comfortably ahead of last year. And they're talking track records for the series. Porsche seems to be the quickest package. Set a pretty comfortable margin for pole. But Audi, in this very, very revised R18, is clearly the team to beat. And one of the ways they did that is they double-stinted their tires. It's always a risky move to do that in an endurance race. Sometimes you win, sometimes you lose. But they did it quite comfortably. And I think it may be a sign of things to come. Toyota, I don't want to say waltzed to the World Endurance Championship last year, but Toyota finally got there. They haven't won Le Mans yet, but they knocked off Audi. Porsche was only in the first year of their program. You know, Nissan's not coming on board quite yet. So I think this is revenge of Audi. You know, how dare anyone else come in on their turf that they've been dominating for over a decade now and knock them off their perch, and it's like they've thrown the kitchen sink at it. So I'm pretty excited for them. I do know that Toyota and Porsche are definitely going to fight back. Porsche seems to just be going from strength to strength. And I'm really curious to see what happens to the WEC season when Nissan's LMP1 car comes on board. Front engine, front wheel drive. I think it's designed solely around Le Mans, but it's going to make quite a splash. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I just have a thought on Nissan. Yeah, I agree with you that, you know, that thing with just its power output, that thing is designed to go down the Mouton straight at full speed. But it's just, you know, I mean, unfortunately, it failed the crash test, so it had to go back to the drawing board. But, you know, making its debut at Le Mans, I mean, pretty much, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, that Audi has been one of the few teams to win with a new car at Le Mans. And so it's just that means,
yeah,
that, you know, you're always going to potentially have teething issues. I mean, Porsche last year, I mean, Porsche was walking away with it in the middle of the night, and they blew up, and that opened the door for Audi to come take another one.
Exactly. And not to be missed, the Tudor United Sports Car Championship is also racing this weekend and on the Long Beach Street Circuit. And I'm curious to see what you guys think will take it on a street circuit to be settling into this pattern where one of the P2 cars, usually a Ligier, goes out and sets the best times in practice, usually gets pole, and it's a DP car-based prototype that usually comes through for the win, but there's a curveball because the Delta Wing is running a street circuit for the first time. I think it's going to be fascinating to see that thing go around Long Beach, specifically because the Delta Wing design was originally an IndyCar proposal. What are you guys looking forward to most for Long Beach, for the sports cars? Who do you think will win? How do you think the Delta Wing is going to handle the tight confines out there in Long Beach?
Yeah, well, I think to win. I mean, you know, keep in mind that we've only got one Ligier in the field from Mike Shank, but I think this is the first time that the Ligier has actually run on a street circuit, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong on that.
Yes, it is. It's their first time on a street circuit as well.
Yeah, so I mean we'll see how it holds up. I mean given the tight nature of the circuit, it could favor the Ligier, but you know, but I mean Scott Pruitt's got Long Beach pretty much figured out. I mean, he won his third sports car race overall there. I mean, he won in Trans Am in the late 90s, and he won in 06 in the first gen Daytona prototype, and then he won last year. So I think Pruitt's probably a lock, and I'm actually wondering if the American, I mean, and I'm banking that the American counterpart Porsche factory GT team can actually finally get the monkey off their back after 2 weeks of both cars running up front and either taking each other out or blowing up at the same time. You know, get that monkey off their back and finally get their first win since Sebring last year. So I mean that's who I'd pick if I had to put down money. But on the Delta wing, you know, it's been quicker in testing this year, but they've yet to finish the race though. So you know, I think you know more work needs to be done to that car before it can get competitive. But I'm wondering if the tight street circuit could, I mean, it could. There's always a chance for danger not to be darker than the clouds in NOLA. But you know, you remember the original Dan Gurney built Delta Wing crash in practice at Petit Le Mans when it hit a Porsche GT car, or it may have been a Ferrari, it doesn't matter. And it hit it with the left rear pod, if you can even call it that, and then that sent the car upside down. I think there's a little bit bigger risk of that being that it's on a street circuit. But I mean we'll see how it pans out. I mean the sleeker designs made it faster on the long straightaways, and Long Beach doesn't have two incredibly long straightaways. So you know it could either be behind the eight ball or what. We'll see.
And the thing about a street circuit is more gear changes per lap than any other type of circuit, than a road course, than a natural road course. So that's been the Achilles heel for the Delta Wing. I think if they can get on top of that, they'll be okay. But I do think the Ligier would be the quickest car around Long Beach. I think it could also be, though, where another P2 car, the more proven thing like the Acura, comes on song, and they can waltz away from it. So I'm really excited. And go ahead.
Except none of the Acuras are running. Are running at Long Beach.
Oh, are they not running at Long Beach?
No,
nope.
The Delta Wing is at Long Beach.
The Delta Wing is, but the Acura or the HPD cars are not at Long Beach.
That's right. Well, otherwise,
yeah.
I feel like they'd be a strong contender. Chris, what are you looking for at Long Beach?
I'm going to shift gears here. I'm going to look at the GT field. I like to see Ferrari, you know, do well out here at Long Beach. Ricci guys haven't done too well recently there. I want to see if they can bring it back in. Although Falcon Tire Porsche did very well at Sebring. They finished third. I believe it was third or maybe fourth. Hope that they do pretty well over at Long Beach, too. Since it is only prototype and GT Le Mans that's going to be there. So that's what I'm looking for.
Exactly. Yeah, I love that it's only prototype and GT Le Mans. You couldn't possibly fit the entire field at Long Beach anyway. So I do have a very soft spot for the Falcon Tire team. Joey and I were at Road Atlanta. We saw them win the GT race there for the final American Le Mans Series race. And they're the underdog. Not only are they a one-car team, they're running Falcon tires as opposed to nearly everyone else in their class running the Michelins. So they're an underdog. They have different setups. They have different compounds. It's great to see them kind of punch above their weight or where you would expect a one-car team to be when you're going up against factory-backed outfits from Ferrari and Corvette and formerly Viper, sadly not anymore, and Porsche, who Josh rightfully pointed out has really got a huge monkey on their back when that GT3 RSR should be a top-of-the-field kind of thing. So It'll be very interesting to watch. I really hope it's not a race of attrition. I'd like to see the Delta Wing finish. I'd like to see the Porsche finish. I'd like to see that Ligier stay consistent. It seems so quick, but it always falls into the clutches of the DP cars because something goes wrong, and those proven DP Corvettes have been pretty much unstoppable. So they'll probably win again. I'll say Action Express will win overall. That's my strong feeling on that. But I really just hope for a good race. And if any listeners out there, fans, are going to Long Beach, any of our colleagues are going to Long Beach, it's got two to United Sports Stars. It's got some of the Monster Road to Indy Series going out there with Indy Lights. It's got Pirelli World Challenge and IndyCar. Pretty much the best bang for your buck weekend you're going to get in North American racing this year. So if any of y'all are out there, let us know. Farmer, are you still going out there?
Yep, I'm leaving tomorrow night. I'm packing as we do the show right now.
Multitasker. I'm quite excited to hear what you see and experience and who all you get to talk to when you're out there. Well, before I get to closing thoughts, Frank, did you have any thoughts on Long Beach? Anybody you're looking at in particular?
I'm looking for the IndyCar Series to rebound from a knucklehead weekend in NOLA and have a great event at Long Beach. Long Beach has always been a great event for years and years. So I hope that the NOLA nonsense hasn't put a black eye on the series. I hope that it hasn't turned the organizers of this event off to where they will pull out like we did in Baltimore, like we did in Houston. I want to see NOLA on the schedule for years to come, but Long Beach is always a great event. I'm looking for a great race. I'm sad Simone's not going to be there. You know, if I was Michael Andretti, I would put Simone in the 27 and tell Marco have a weekend off, but he ain't going to do that. So.
No way. All right, well, we'll move on to final thoughts. Final thoughts on the weekend that was. I love the NOLA nonsense line, by the way. And what are you most looking forward to in the weeks ahead? Chris, you want to kick us off?
Well, I almost echo Frank's sentiments, except that I don't want Marco to get out of the seat. I want to see Simona and, of course, but not at the cost of Marco. Oh, okay. Sorry, I accidentally hit something here at the on the printer. I'm looking forward to seeing how Simone Pagenaud and the Ryan Hunter Ray race each other in Long Beach. I hope Tacone can get his stuff together. That being said, I'm also looking forward to seeing how the new Indy Lights car goes out with another race underneath its belt out there in Long Beach. That's going to be a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, I've got a little bit of caution of, you know, can you know, how many more of these bad weekends can IndyCar take before it finally kicks the bucket? You know, it's just, and, you know, and kind of, you know, and kind of pursuant to what Brian Curcio said on the show a few months back of, you know, you're starting to, you know, when you start pissing off the people that you've been loyal to, you know, how much longer is it going to take? But, I mean, Long Beach, you know, I mean, the organizers do a terrific job. It gets out of great attendance, and IndyCar always looks like a winner at Long Beach.
It really does. I'd say after the Indy 500, Long Beach is the second biggest IndyCar weekend. And with all the support series they've got Indy Lights, they've got Pirelli World Challenge, they have the Team United Sports Car Championship. There's a lot of energy around it. The crowds will be good. The crowds are always good out in Southern California. So I think IndyCar is really lucky in a way. It's scheduled just a week after the NOLA nonsense, would be how I described last weekend now for forever. It's a great chance for IndyCar to rebound, and I think they will rebound. I do expect, as Frank was saying, I think Ganassi will stretch back. I think they are definitely in the hunt. I am also definitely looking forward to Bristol. It's always interesting when you take an 800-horsepower stock car and you put it on a track that tiny that looks like Usain Bolt should be running on it, not an 800-horsepower stock car. So that'll be curious to see. I hope Kevin Harvick kind of rebounds a little bit. He could have been in the hunt at TMS as I was watching it, from what Joey and some others who were there told me. So it's good Jimmy Johnson won again. It's kind of like NASCAR is healthy if Jimmy Johnson's winning. It's the same way Formula One is healthy if Ferrari is winning. So looking at Bahrain, I do think it will be Mercedes again. I'm really looking for Nico Rosberg's last stand. I think it's his last shot. I am really, really hoping he gives us all something to root for, something that keeps it from turning into the Lewis Hamilton show, version 2.0. So those are my final thoughts. Frank, did you have anything else you wanted to add?
You know, just tune in to listen to us on a Blog Talk Radio every week. And, you know, I love talking racing with you guys. My final thoughts are, I love talking racing with you guys. If you want to hear other run-offs, that's, you know, hit me up on Drafting Circuits on Who's the Radio Network. We're there every Wednesday night.
There you go. Yes, your same shameless self-promotion plugs. Oh, Chris, what is the one more thing? If it's miles to road to India, I'm going to jump through this broadcast.
No. It was one more thing you want to know that I didn't mention earlier. I actually was on the IMS radio network for the Saturday practice, actually the third practice session, and I was also on the local the CBS affiliate, WWL. So I was doing a little writing, getting on the air, then McKen Folks said, Chris, move away from there, and I don't know if someone laughed at that. Anyway, it was a lot of fun at NOLA. I'm glad that I got the experience there, and let's roll on Long Beach.
Amen to that. Well, you can check out Frank's stuff on Drafting the Circuits. You can see Chris's work on motorsport.com, and Josh is on Motorsport Monday. Joey's not here to say his usual Forza Jewels. So I will say that Forza Jewels, keep fighting, Shumi. Thoughts and prayers are with anyone who's ever injured in the line of racing, the sport that we love so much. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm Adam Tate of Tribute Racing. For Frank Santoroski and Christopher DeHardy and Josh Farmer, thank you, everyone, for listening in. And we will catch you all next week on In the Gravel Trap. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.